Dave, I know that you're not a construction expert, and I know that you look upon Trump's project, his latest construction project, as not anything other than a metaphor. Why don't you tell everybody who's listening what you think about the destruction of the East Wing of the White House?
Yeah, it's more of a destruction project than a construction project.
Yeah.
And as you said, it is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for his presidency that he's destroying things that have been built up over the last couple centuries. The thing about it is this what MAGA wanted him to do? And to a certain extent, yeah, they wanted to have some of them said tear down the deep state. Others, tear down the elitism. But of course, the way Trump is doing this is catering to the elite. Nobody in MAGA world of the ordinary people is ever going to be in that ballroom. He's treating this as if it's Mar-a-Lago. It's his own property. And that was something that was evident when it came to the papers that he took when he left the presidency, and the National Archives tried to retrieve them, and he said, these are mine. They belong to me, which isn't true. But that's how he treats everything. They're his. And then the way he does the project is also emblematic of the way he does things to show his power or his strength. He just does it. And he doesn't ask anybody about it. He doesn't go through the proper channels. He doesn't really acknowledge, take input from anybody else. He just says, we're going to do it. We're going to do it this way. In destroying that, now I've seen some people say, now wait a minute, there's really a more nefarious thing going on here, that when they go to put the foundation in on the new mega project that he's going to have, the price tag, by the way, keeps rising. Remember, it was 200 million and 250. Now he's talking 300 million, maybe more, that there's going to be some sort of a bunker down there for him to get into and to protect him when should things happen. That's the conspiratorial mind look, but I don't think you could totally rule that thing out. It's there's a lot of ways you can think of going on this thing, and of course he says he is financing this with money, and he released a whole list of persons and businesses and institutions that have ponied up money for this ballroom, so to speak. And that's another thing that he's doing. He's privatizing a public the pub, the funding of a public facility.
Well, he just privatized the army, so why shouldn't he privatize the
Yeah.
construction?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's the thing. If Timothy Mellon, who's putting up the 130 million of the army, wants him to do something, are they going to do it because he says, I'm paying for
Yeah.
it? I mean, this removes the whole idea of government.
That's right. That's
This,
right. This is private. This is a return to the Middle Ages, where armies were raised by dukes and other people like that at the behest of the sovereign, but they were paid by the dukes and the earls. And the sovereign didn't have his own army. He had the assemblage of armies of dukes and earls. And this is a reversion to that, as if the nation state has no significance, has no meaning, is outmoded.
right. Except as a vehicle for him to use.
That's right. But I think that this destruction of the nation state, and this destruction of democracy and democratic oversight, which is what this is. In the East Wing, it's irrelevant. In the Army, it's extremely significant. This is right out of the Libertarian Handbook. This is precisely what my old friend Murray Rothbard was writing about in the 1950s and 1960s. This is what all the Peter Thiels and Peter Thiel, you know, acolytes, this is exactly what they want. This is exactly why Bitcoin and cryptocurrency exists, because everything is to be privatized. There's to be no public power. There's to be no public society. Of course, there really is society, and the society really is dominated by the people who own things.
Well, there's to be no accountability. That
not for them.
No, and that's
for
what
you, for me, you know, not for them.
Remember, that's what crypto was intended to do, was to work, to have a whole system outside the public system.
Outside democratic accountability. As Peter Thiel says, he no longer believes freedom and democracy are compatible.
Compatible, yeah, which is a dangerous idea.
But that's the idea of the metaphor of the East Wing. That's the idea of the Timothy Mellon paying the army. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, it's just you know, and remember, crypto was really the basis of scammers. It was used for drug runners. It was used for arms merchants, and it was used just
was used for sex trafficking.
Sex trafficking, yeah.
Exactly.
You know, all the activities that society doesn't really want.
No, it has no economic value. It has no economic use. It has only a use against and outside the law.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, it has a big use, because the people who promote it and who profit from it love it, for the very reason that it's outside the law and it's very profitable for them. Although it's a scam on everybody else. Well, as a matter of fact, I think that the destruction of the East Wing is something that Trump's people like, because it shows he gets things done. It really doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter whether it's good or it's bad. He gets things done. And you know,
and that was the thing, the government can't do things for you anymore.
Exactly. And don't forget, his coalition consists of people who own everything and people who own nothing. This is a sop to the people who own nothing, to the people who have to be convinced that their problems arise not from the depredations, theft, and power of the people who own everything, but from the Mexican workers or you know, other immigrants from wherever they may come from, or from the subhuman blacks or the conniving Jews. That's where their problem is, all concentrated in the deep state. And the reason people have not profited from their labor and the great wealth that's been created by their labor has flowed upward and they got very little of it, is because these nameless others concentrated in the deep state saw to that, and this guy Trump will do something about it. And that's manifested by the fact that he does things and doesn't pay attention to the rules. So that's something that the Democrats haven't figured out.
Yeah, what he's going to do is make things worse.
He will make things worse for everybody. Not for the
plutocrats and the oligarchs.
Yeah, this is precisely what they want. Timothy Mellon isn't going to lose $130 million. He's going to get it all back in spades. Somehow. We don't know how. Somehow. It doesn't matter how. But populism is the con that in America uses racism to convince workers that some other group, Italian immigrants, Jewish immigrants, black people, Hispanic people, that's the source of their problem. You don't have to change the system. You don't have to regulate the Peter Thiels. You don't have to regulate the banks that steal, or the Amazon that cheats. That's not the important thing. What you got to do is take care of that subhuman immigrant, that subhuman black, that satanic Jew. They're the cause of your problems. That's what populism is in America, and it's always been that way. From Southern populism at the turn of the 20th century, from the 19th century, to all the way through to Trump. That's what it is. And if the Democrats want to be populist, they're just playing into Trump's hands. They're playing in, they can't out fascist the fascists. There's no way. And it's definitely not good for people in the country if we have the opposition party trying to behave like the dominant party.
Well,
what do you think of that?
And, yeah. Well, you know, you talk about the dominant party, but they really weren't the majority party.
But they're dominant. They have the power.
Yeah.
They have the power. Listen, the Peter Thiels of this world are not in the majority. There's of the 300 million Americans, 200 some odd million are workers and their families. That's the majority, but they don't have the power. And the redistricting is going to guarantee that the electoral system is going to keep them from power forever. Right?
Yeah, well, maybe. That's start, you know, the Democrats seem to be fighting back on that. You know, Texas did its deal. And so then Gavin Newsom said, well, we're going to do the same thing in California, except California had a different rules. California already had a statute that was prevented that, or constitutional thing. And they came up with Prop 50, which said, you know, we're going to make an exception here and we're going to redistrict again.
Right.
And it looks like it's going to pass by a big number.
Right.
Which means California can pick up, can sort of offset some of Texas. Now, of course, then you get Florida and North Carolina doing the Republicans' bidding. But Indiana was supposed to, and apparently that stalled. There's a couple Republicans that aren't going to go along with that. But now Virginia is coming along and saying, we're going to redistrict. We'll pick up a couple of Democratic seats, two, maybe three out of there.
I read somewhere that somebody did a state-by-state analysis and said that the gerrymandering would pick up 19 seats for the Republicans.
Yeah, that was before this latest, these latest surges. It may not be that that many. It still probably is a net positive for the Republicans.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that behind the scenes, even though the Democratic Party is polling very badly in the abstract, when you look at other factors on the, like the generic ballot, the Democrats are now up, I think I saw 8 points. Like, who will you vote for? So they're not talking about being a Democrat, they're just talking voting that way. And there are other, you know, there have been other signs. Don't forget, in smaller elections, you know, the Democrats have been outpacing what the national ticket did in 2024 by a lot. They've flipped a number of seats in state legislatures or what have you. And we're going to have to see if that that trend holds. But we saw that that trend happening back, I guess, in 2016. Even before Obama got elected, that thing. And then you see it go the other way for the Republicans. So, you know, you have to watch some of these elections. That's why the elections in Virginia and New Jersey seem so important. They're the two bellwether ones. Virginia seems pretty safe for the Democrats at this point.
For the governor.
Yeah, for the governor. I saw that Spanberger is at 55%. She's up by about a dozen or 13 points there. And once you break 50, it's pretty hard, what have you. New Jersey, they're talking about it being a lot closer. I'm not sure, but, you know, it's Jersey had been trending a little bit more Republican, you know, in some of the counties. On the other hand, I'm seeing things about Hispanic voters who chose to go for Trump. And now his popularity among those is tanking because they're seeing what you know, how he's handling things with fellow Hispanics. So,
listen, 42 million people are going to lose food stamps next week or in two weeks. Is that going to not make an impact on their lives and on their thinking and on the thinking of their friends and on their family members? Yeah. Every one of those people has friends and family members. Some of them vote, and I'm sure some of them voted for Trump.
Oh, yeah. It's like people voted for Trump and then have friends or people that they rely on getting deported or getting picked up by ICE.
Exactly. Exactly.
And
that comes as a great shock to them.
Yeah. Oh, they weren't the ones we wanted to affect, you know?
Exactly.
We wanted the criminals, except they're not going after all the criminals, or there weren't that many criminals to start
with. They weren't going after criminals to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. And, we're going to see it in other respects. Now, don't forget, the Republican, the House of Representatives.
You do know that ICE, as rotten as it is deporting fewer people than were deported by Obama or Biden on an annual basis because of their incompetence.
But the appearance, see, they're all about perception.
Yeah.
Not like you said, competence. We know because that even from the first Trump administration, you know, the more incompetent people are the ones that he has to rely on because no one competent wants to work for him. But I was going to say, don't forget that the House of Representatives isn't even in session. Well, they worked only like 12 days since the summer, something like that.
That's probably good.
Yeah. Back to the old, Mark Twain line that no man's liberty was a greater peril than when the legislature's in session.
Yes. He also said, Mark Twain, that God never created any native criminal race except congressmen.
Yes. He was a great American. So we have all of those things. And, they still haven't sworn in the Grijalva lady.
Right.
Now,
and they're not going. He said he's not going to.
You know, but this is what I raised this question last week. And I heard a discussion on the Dan Abrams show with the Secretary of State in Arizona, who's suing on behalf of Grijalva, right, deem her the congressman. And one of the call-in people asked, is the, does the speaker have to be the one to swear in?
Right.
And he said no. They never got into the follow-up. Then why the heck doesn't she go to?
Yeah, to any place else, right.
To any place else.
Yeah.
As you pointed out,
some weeks ago, Lyndon Johnson didn't get sworn in as president when Kennedy got shot by the vice president.
Right.
There was nobody. He was sworn in by a local district judge.
Right. Right.
As was president.
Yeah, as president.
Yeah.
And that's what befuddles me. Unless the Democrats are, and I can't believe they're, are just kind of want the appearance of Johnson being, an obstacle. But that doesn't make sense to me.
That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. And if somebody said that, well, her election had to be certified, and then
But it's been
anybody could
certified.
swear. But it's been certified, exactly.
Yeah, and all the excuses that Johnson said, well, we want to give her the pomp and circumstance. She doesn't want the pomp and circumstance.
That's right.
Well,
And he says, I can't do it. I can't do it when Congress is not in session. That's not true. Congress doesn't have to be in session. It has nothing to do with it.
And they have these interim, these pro forma sessions that happen where they gavel them in and then gavel them out.
Right.
And then
that's right.
And then the other thing is that he said, well, Pelosi waited, 20 days to swear in this other person, which is true, but that was because the other person requested it.
Anyway, this isn't 20 days. This is many more than 20 days.
Right.
Well, it's all part of shutting down the government and not having a government. And after all, if you're going to have a private army, you don't need to have a House of Representatives to originate appropriations for the army, because there's no longer a public army.
Right. I mean, this is it. We don't, why have government? I can almost see the fact that Trump says, well, we've gotten along this far without a House of Representatives. Mike Johnson, you just keep them out and I'll just run things.
Excuse me, on Friday, Trump said to the Senate, we don't need to pass any more laws. You've done enough.
Yeah. We'll just appropriate the money that we want to appropriate in the way we want to appropriate it without Congress.
That's right. I know the Democrats make the point that they're fighting to save Obamacare subsidies, and that's all to the good. But the fact of the matter is how is it possible to make a deal with people who tell you up front they're not going to live up to the deal? Trump tells you up front he's only going to spend the money he wants to spend, no matter what the Congress appropriates. So in that sense, what kind of deal could be made? And by making a deal, don't you fool the people into thinking that their vote counts, that the appropriation counts, that the Congress counts?
Yeah. Well, I've long asked the question, why would you elect someone to Congress into the government who doesn't believe in the governing?
That's right. But have the Democrats raised that point anywhere? I don't think so.
No.
They're
just stuck on messaging.
On messaging.
They had a couple people, but they had that oyster man up in Maine who seemed to know how to message, but he's run into...
Well, he had the wrong message on his chest.
Yeah.
He had a swastika or something. He had a
SS skull
insignia.
And crossbone.
Yeah.
And his stock has dropped dramatically. He was way up. Now they have the governor of Maine running against Susan Collins. So we'll have to see how that one shows.
She's not against... I mean, she doesn't pull well against Collins either.
No. And then you have Mamdani. Yeah, I keep getting that mixed up. He's messaging very well.
That's right. And I happen to think that that's the most important election this cycle. I don't think that the Jersey election is as important or the Virginia election is as important, because he is really doing the kind of I can do it thing that Trump does, but he doesn't do it on a populist basis. See, they say he's a left-wing populist. There's no such thing as a left-wing populist. There's either a populist who's a racist, or there's a social democrat or a socialist who's not a racist, but who's a structuralist, a class politics person. He's a class politics person. That's completely different. He doesn't say the Chinese are responsible for this, or that the Jewish conspiracy, or the Jewish landlords are causing the rent to be high. He says landlords are causing the rent to be high. That's a completely different message. My daughter, who lives in New York and has been active in the campaign, wrote to me the other day that this was 2 days ago. She was out canvassing in the northern part of Manhattan with about 200 people on Sunday. And then another 60 came for a later shift. And in central Harlem at the same time, there were 650 canvassing, and there were 360 canvassing around Columbia University area. And in Brooklyn, there were so many people canvassing, they had to make block by block teams because there were too many people. That is what the Democrats have to learn to do. And if it takes a Mondani to teach them how to do it, then they need a Mondani.
Although I remember here locally, Harris had a lot of canvassers and Matt Cartwright had a ton of canvassers. And, you know, they got swamped. They got swamped.
Well, Cartwright didn't get swamped. He didn't lose by, he wasn't overthrown yeah. by a lot. He lost.
Yeah, but they got swamped by the by the turnout for Trump. Is what happened. Trump brought out more people than they had.
Right,
they had
because there is because elections are not the beginning of the process; they are the end of the political process. Yeah. You've got to build the base in between elections. The way to win the election in 2028 is now, today. It's to start organizing today by building neighborhood organizations in cities and regional organizations in rural areas, by setting up things that are identified with the Democratic Party or with the opposition to the governing party, whoever it might be, that does childcare programs, that does, you know, student programs, does old age programs that people have a living connection to. They participate in it and they benefit from it. And then they vote for it.
Yeah. Well, you got Steve Bannon out there trying to gin up the MAGA base that Trump is going to be on the ballot again in 2028.
And do you doubt that he might?
Anything is possible with this.
There might not be a ballot in 2028. Okay, it may be that, but because if he goes to war with Venezuela, which is what I believe he's going to do next week or the week after, because there's this enormous buildup of the American military in the Caribbean right this minute, that makes no sense unless the war is an invasion of Venezuela is in the offing. If that happens, well, we're in a national emergency. And while it may be that Lincoln said we can have an election, Trump says we can't in a national emergency. Yeah.
You know, we're talking about the Democrats are organizing something, and locally things are a mess. I don't know if we have time even to get into it, but
But you can say that it's a mess.
It's a mess.
Yeah,
we might wind up with two county commissioners.
But wait, as I understand it, the Democrats proposed somebody to be the county commissioner. She was accepted for whatever reason, however it happened. She was sworn in, and she immediately made a compact with the Republican commissioner and forced out the other Democrat, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, she's relegated.
So what did the Democratic Party chair say about that?
Well, he's happy about that because
why the Democrats can't beat the Republicans, right? Because people like that are able to lead the Democratic Party. Right?
Yeah, the old boy network, except they have a woman in front of them now.
Well, there's always people around to lead the reactionaries. Yeah,
we'll know better within in 10 days.
Yeah.
We'll know better in 10 days how that works out. So,
all right. Let's hope that we're not at war next week. I hope we're not. But we might be. See you next week.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.